broadcasting from Cincinnati.
You're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robbie. We have a great show for you today, and as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. Today, we're going to talk about the Triple G and David Lemieux. The pay-per-view numbers are in, Robbie. They're in.
And they're very disappointing, folks.
Manny Pacquiao gives us the date for his next fight and probably his last fight. Our train wreck of the week this week, our Adrian Broner train wreck of the week this week involves none other than our very own Ringside Robbie.
Yeah, I screwed up on this.
He messed up. Own it. The history lesson this week goes deep. Robbie, we're going deep this week. October 30, 1974, the Rumble in the Jungle. Ali versus Foreman.
I enjoyed watching this one, man.
Absolutely. But first, we start with the illest man in Nebraska, Terrence Crawford versus Derry John. Listen, man, here's the deal. We expected Terrence Crawford to win this fight. But wow, did he do it impressively. It was pretty apparent from the opening bell that John was in deep water. He was knocked down after Crawford switched to southpaw at the end of the first round. It was a short, perfect, crisp right hook that put Derry John down. John was rocked again in the fourth round and cut in the fifth round over the right eye. John was knocked down again in the ninth round with a pair of left hands by Crawford. In the tenth round, Crawford continued to pound Derry. He nailed John with a right hand, a left, and then John went down along the ropes, and then, which prompted, of course, referee Tony Weeks to step in and wave off the fight at about 2 minutes and 30 seconds. There were over 10,000 people there.
11,020 was the official attendance.
11,020 people there in Nebraska, of all places. This guy is a hometown hero there. And I tell you what, I wish Adrian Broner would take notes because he had less than 5,000 there for his hometown fight here in Cincinnati.
Well, see, Terrence Crawford likes to talk to the media. Adrian Broner does not.
Well, yeah, I mean, Adrian Broner only talks, you know, when he talks about some girl giving him crabs or something stupid, you know, or talking about smacking around Rihanna or whatever he was talking about last time.
Yeah.
You know, just foolishness, you know. But let me tell you what, man, Terrence Crawford, as far as the crowd, I mean, that was almost as impressive as the fight was.
Oh, yeah.
10,000 in Nebraska, and he regularly sells that place out. Every time he fights there, it's
perfect. And how many people gets Warren Buffett to show up to all your fights?
You know, I know of all of his fights, right. Floyd Mayweather hung out with, you know, supposedly hung out with Warren Buffett or met Warren Buffett or whatever. But Terrence Crawford, you know, this guy's, you know, going to his fights and everything. They're juiced in, man.
And what I like about Buffett is he doesn't buy ringside seats. He buys real regular seats and sits in, you know.
How awesome was that to see?
Yeah.
You know, no wonder he's like one of the richest guys in the world. You know, he saves his money. You know, he knows he doesn't have to sit ringside and get everything splattered all over him, you know, sweat on him and everything like that. He sits in a little row, sees the fight just fine.
I think that's cooler than anything else.
I mean, too. When I saw him and they were like, and you know, and they made reference to his seats and everything, and I looked, I'm like, boy, he sure ain't ringside, is he? He's not up in the boondocks, but I mean, he's got a regular seat, you know.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, look at that, amazing.
You know, I mean, no, and look, I love Crawford, and you know, everybody's talking about Crawford and Pacquiao, but. Man, I want to see him fight Victor Postol. And, you know, he fights so well southpaw. I think he should fight southpaw all the time, man.
I mean, the way he was switching in this fight. And incidentally, I looked at the punch stat numbers. Derry John landed 51 shots. 51.
Yep.
51. That's it. All right, that's just amazing to me, man. The number that Crawford, I mean, offense, defense, everything was clicking. Apparently there was a lot of trash talk going on before the fight by Jean and his managers or his camp or whatever, saying they're going to take the belt out of there and this and that. And
they really got
under his skin.
I love one of the quotes. They said, yeah, we're going to take your title, we have a rematch clause, and we're going to give you the rematch in your own hometown, or we're going to beat you again. And boy, did that piss him off.
Yeah, he wasn't too happy, man, and you can see it in the fight, man. He really wasn't happy. You know, Terry John, you know, he's only lost one other time. And
so to Lamont Peterson, yeah.
Right. I mean, he's a quality fighter. I didn't expect, you know, I expected it to be competitive. I didn't expect it to be this one-sided. I mean, I thought it would be like the Delorme fight where he gave Crawford some problems early and then Crawford would figure him out and ultimately run. Crawford needed no problem. I mean, he had no problems in this fight. I mean, he walked right through Jean, man.
Yep.
Absolutely. And of course, all through the fight and, of course, after the fight, HBO was touting the Crawford and Pacquiao fight, and of course after the fight, Crawford said, "Yeah, I'll fight Pacquiao, no problem." You know,
if anybody's offered a Pacquiao fight, of course they're going to say yes.
Well, sure.
You know, I mean, that's going to be the biggest payday you ever have. You know,
right?
I mean,
you know. Well, what do you think? I mean, as far as like a Crawford Pacquiao fight, man. Boy, I tell you, that's a tough one. I mean, because it would have to take place at 140, I would think, and I don't think Pacquiao has any problems making 140.
No, but I think Terrence Crawford has the height, the reach advantage, and with Pacquiao being out of the ring, by the time April rolls around, he'll be out of the ring almost a year. We don't know what kind of Manny Pacquiao is going to show up. I think the illest man in Nebraska will thoroughly dominate a very rusty Manny Pacquiao. I think it will wind up one-sided myself.
I think it might, too. I mean, I mean, it depends on which Pacquiao shows up. And the thing is with that is that, you know, I mean, look, man, Pacquiao, he's going to run for another seat in Congress or another term for Congress. They were talking about he has 30 days. He'll have 30 days to campaign if he takes a fight on April 9th. Okay, so he'll have 30 days to campaign. If that's the case, you know, how focused is he going to be on a fight? You know what I mean? That's my thing, is how focused would he be on this fight? I don't know. The fight is rumored to take place in Las Vegas. That's what Bob Arum is saying, that the fight will probably take place in Las Vegas. But, you know, who knows? Who knows? And who knows who Crawford's next guy is going to be? It makes sense for HBO and Bob Arum. That fight makes complete sense. For Manny Pacquiao, maybe not so much. You know.
I applaud Pacquiao for even considering a guy like Crawford because he doesn't want. He's made it very clear he does not want to do what Floyd did and take a guy like Andre Berto and just win the fight and leave. Pacquiao said that he wants a competitive fight. He wants somebody that can actually give him a fight, but Terrence Crawford would be biting off more than you can chew, especially considering how long the layoff is going to be by the time the fight actually happens.
You know, what is it, 11 months? I think it'll be 11 months.
Yeah,
11 months before the fight actually happens. I don't know. I don't, you know, I mean, he might have some ring rust, maybe, I don't know.
I don't know.
You know, for HBO and Bob Arum, this fight makes perfect sense because it's a money fight, and it's kind of like a passing of the torch type fight.
Well, yeah, I know. Look, for that aspect of it, I'm not against it because I think Terrence Crawford is the next top rank big pay-per-view possible star because for those that don't pay attention to promotional things, Top Rank has nothing to do with Triple G. That's somebody else. So for Top Rank to develop their next pay-per-view star, this is the only chip they have in the game.
Pretty much. This is their big guy. I mean, this is it. I mean, it's him and that's it. And, you know, before you had Pacquiao and he's making you all kinds of money, but you know, I mean, you know, it's time now because he'll say, like I said, man, it's looking like his last fight's coming up. And if it's not his last fight, he surely doesn't have too many more in the tank.
I believe Manny when he says this is it. Manny's not like Floyd that's going to say, well, you know, I'm retired, and then he changes his mind and comes, like he did the first time he retired. He retired, and then he did, oh, I'm going to come back. I think once Manny Pacquiao retires, I don't think you'll ever see him come back. Because he's involved in politics in the Philippines. He's talking about one day running for president over there. I don't think you'll ever see Manny Pacquiao in the ring. Once he says he's done, he's done.
Yeah, I agree with that too. I think he's got too much going on, and I think the Mayweather fight really should have been his last fight. To be honest with you, I mean, I don't. What else do you got left? I mean, what else do you got to prove?
Well, Eric, I don't blame the guy for wanting to. Because do you really want to go out that way, losing? Bad. I mean, that bad to a guy like
Mayweather. $1 million, and you know, I mean, you know, the other thing, man. I mean, you know, people say he won that fight. You know, a lot of people say he won that fight.
I
don't think he won the fight, but a lot of people say, you know, and when you watch it back, and when you watch the, you know, when you start counting punches and everything like that, I thought Mayweather won the fight. You know,
of course he did.
But
hell, I scored it 10-2. I mean, for those that think Pacquiao won the fight, there. They had too much to drink that night. That's my honest opinion. You know, it's and look, I was rooting for Pacquiao. I picked Pacquiao because you know, but Manny Pacquiao did not win that fight, and I don't blame Manny. Look, all fighters don't want to go out in their last fight with a loss, especially one that turned out to be as bad as that was.
Right.
But at least Manny. It doesn't seem like, anyway, Manny wants to take a cupcake like Mayweather did and, you know, just walk away. Manny wants somebody who's going to give him a fight. And if he loses a fair and square fight and he doesn't get blown out like he did against Mayweather, I think that'll be a lot easier to accept. So, you know.
But you say blown out by Mayweather. I mean, Mayweather really didn't do much in the fight. It's not like Mayweather hurt him or anything like that. He ran around the ring. He didn't, I mean, it was a typical Mayweather performance. He didn't do anything to hurt him or embarrass him or anything like that.
Well,
the
problem you have in Las Vegas, anyway, is those judges are trained to score everything for Mayweather. So it looks horrible on the scorecards.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, man, I don't think it was a horrible loss for him. I don't think it was an embarrassing loss for him. It was a loss, but I don't think there's any, you know, there's no shame in losing. Number one, there's no shame in losing to Mayweather.
No.
And losing like he did, it wasn't like he was knocked out. You know,
right.
It wasn't like he, you know, like the loss to Marquez, you know. I mean,
Where
they were both fighting each other. I mean,
you know, I don't blame Manny for this. And, you know, because he even said, you know, I don't want it to look like Floyd did with Berto. He said, I want a competitive fight. And if I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. But I don't want the Mayweather fight to be the last time people see me in the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's his choice. I mean, if he wants to come back, that's great. But, you know, does he come back against Crawford? Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, I know HBO and Arum are definitely pushing that for sure. So.
Well, and Terrence said, you know, after the fight, he said, Bob, make it happen, you know? So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, he's going to push to make that happen for sure.
That's right. But I'd love to see him fight Postal. I think that'd be a great fight, and you can have that fight in Nebraska. Whereas, you know, if you're going to fight Pacquiao, guess what? It's going to be in Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Arum said it was going to be the last fight is probably going to be in Vegas. I think Pacquiao would probably like to have it overseas for tax purposes and everything. But you know, I think for
I'm surprised Manny doesn't have his last fight actually in the Philippines. You know.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know what, you're right. You kind of wonder about that. I wonder why.
You know.
Has to be money thing.
I mean, the last big money fight that the Filipinos ever had was the Thriller in Manila. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I tell you, you know what's funny, though, about that is that, like, with the Philippines and everything like that, you wonder, I mean, could he actually... Could they actually make a big fight there, and could it actually work?
Manny Pacquiao is so popular in that country, people would show up. Do you mean by work?
Well, I mean, could you get the money? Could it garner the money? Could you get the same kind of money as you would in Vegas? Could you get the same kind of money as you would? Because clearly you'd sell more seats,
Yeah, you would definitely sell more seats, but the problem I think they would have with a Filipino fight would be the time difference, and how would they do it for like US TV for the pay-per-view purposes, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the major problems.
Man.
Because let's face it, everything revolves around TV these days.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, you know.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens on that front, man. But a big win by Terrence Crawford, man. I can't wait to see this guy. Every time this guy fights, man, you want to see it, you know.
And like I said, I think he'd be better off fighting softball on a full-time basis. Why come out orthodox? Because every time he switches to softball, he looks devastating.
Well, because they're not expecting it, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the thing. Is I mean, it's hard to, you know. I mean, it's hard to train for somebody like that. I mean, who constantly is switching up on you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, and it's amazing to watch him do it. I mean, and he just, it's so seamless, you know. I mean, the guy's just a pure athlete, man.
Yeah, he is. The only big fight this weekend, it was well worth the time, man.
It definitely did not disappoint, for sure.
No.
Let's talk about, let's go across the pond here, man. Let's talk about your boy, Chris Eubank Jr. versus
Tony Jeter. I can't call him my boy. I've never seen the boy fight. So
Chris Eubank Sr. is my boy, all right? That's who I like, all right? A guy like him, he dresses in suits in the corner. I think the guy's always dressed to the nine, dressed to the hilt.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like he just got out of the cover of a GQ magazine and just went straight to the fight, man. This
guy
is decked out constantly.
Okay.
All right. So Eubank Jr. had an easy time this weekend, man. Knocked Jeter down in the first round with a big left hook. And then the referee, Howard Foster, was forced to stop the bout early in the second as Jeter took punishment along the ropes. A very easy fight, you know, for Eubank. Definitely overmatched here, Jeter was. Following the bout, promoter Eddie Hearn confirmed that the WBA had made Eubank Jr.'s next bout against Gary O'Sullivan on December 12th. The final eliminator to face the victor of Peter Quillen and Daniel Jacobs. So he's going to fight Gary Spike O'Sullivan, on December 12th. And then the winner of that fight will face the winner of Quillen and Jacobs for the WBA.
Since his nickname is Spike, they should put that on Spike TV.
That's right. Yeah. And this will be, again, this will be over in London, I'm sure.
Yep.
I want to see him, you know, and I guess if he gets the title shot, he's coming here.
That's
so
right.
There's no, you know, I don't see Quillen or Jacobs going to England for it, and I don't see, whatchamacallit, not Top Rank, but Al Heyman in the Bulls.
Al Heyman,
You know, doing this either, so.
No. If he gets a title shot with one of those guys, and frankly, I don't know who's going to win that. I have my ideas, but, you know, I don't know who's going to win that fight, but whoever it is, he's definitely going to have. And look, all the British fighters have been coming over here thanks to Al Heyman. So, yeah, I guess we get to see Chris Eubank Sr. dress in his tuxedo when it comes to a title shot here in the U.S.
Love it. I'm going to start doing that just to go to the grocery store or something like that, just dressing in like a three-piece suit, getting all dressed up like Eubank, and then just going to the grocery store or something like that, or going to soccer practice. And that's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do when I go to soccer again. I'm going to go ahead and put on like a three-piece suit or whatever and then just go over there, and that's I'm going to be on the sideline.
Okay. Wow.
And
all
I'll have pictures on the website.
There you go.
Let's talk about the show box results. Rob Brandt scored a competitive 10-round unanimous decision over an unknown, the unknown, of course, being Louis Unknown Rose, in a 10-round 10-round fight here. The scores were 96-94, 96-94, and 95-95. So it was a very close fight, man. But
I think Louis's going to stay unknown.
Yeah, after that fight, he's going to stay unknown. That's a horrible nickname, by the way, the unknown.
Yeah.
What are you thinking of? Who's managing you? I mean, who's your manager that's sitting around with this big think tank consortium saying, I got it, the unknown. That's your name. The unknown, that's perfect.
Well, and I forget who the fighter was. Maybe it was on the Showbox card, either this Showbox card or the last one. But there was a fighter that his nickname was the main event.
Yeah, that's this guy. Yeah, Samuel Clarkson. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, you're on, and you open up the telecast, and yet you're calling yourself the main event.
He should have called himself the co-main event.
Sometimes when they come up with names for these fighters, I'm like,
well, what about the guy he was fighting, Lavarne Baby Bo Harvell?
It's like, oh my God. And he looked nothing like Riddick Bowe. I think that's where it come from, but he looked nothing like Riddick Bowe.
Looked nothing like him, you know. Yeah. But let's talk about that one. Samuel, main event, Clarkson, dropped Baby Bowe, Harvell, twice in the first round en route to a second round KO. And then this is the night of the nickname, man, because heavyweight prospect Jarrell Big Baby Miller. That's my nickname my wife gave me, Big Baby.
And he came in weighing 280 pounds, so I guess he is a big baby.
You say that again. Jeez. Yeah, 280 pounds. How do you get in there 280 pounds and do that, man?
Jeez.
What are you thinking about? Yeah. And he knocked out his guy in round three, Muralimov. I'm telling you, I can speak
I don't normally criticize Showbox, but these were three fights that were a waste of time.
You don't think any of these guys are going to be champions?
No. Well, let me put it to you this way. I have to see a lot more of them, and I have to see more than what I saw Friday night.
Right. Yeah, it wasn't Showbox's best moment, I'll tell you that.
No.
So, all right, let's look ahead to the upcoming fights this week. Coming up on Friday, October 30th, on Bounce TV from Florida, Tony Thompson will fight Malik Scott, 10 rounds, heavyweights, and Lydell Rhodes versus Sergey Limpinets, 10 rounds, junior welterweights.
I can't believe Tony Thompson is still fighting. I mean, here's a guy that's lost to Vladimir Klitschko not once, but twice.
Yeah, what else is there left? I mean, what's going on here?
You know? I mean, are you that desperate for money?
I think he is.
And what's next? Are you going to be put in the ring with Antonio, I take steroids, Tarver? You know? I mean, by the way, that should be his new nickname, Antonio, I take steroids, Tarver.
Well,
you know?
And I think his career is pretty much done, because what's going to happen, I mean, after, you know, Mr. I Didn't Do It says, you know, once that gets cleared,
yeah.
I think he's going to be suspended for about a year. Isn't that the steroid, if you're popped for steroid, that's a year, right?
Yeah, and remember, this is the second time he's done this. Because the first time, Showtime, he was the analyst for Showtime on all their fights. And the first time he got caught, Showtime said, "The hell with you." They dumped him and replaced him with Polly, and the rest is history. I wonder if Spike TV is going to do the same thing with this idiot.
No, I think there's a big difference between Showtime and Spike TV. I mean,
I don't know.
But you know what's funny is that, you know, so you took steroids before the fight, and all you did was garner up a draw. That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you could do. You couldn't even win the fight.
Yeah.
All you did was just muster up a draw. And a disputed draw at that, you know.
And which means Steve Cunningham is going to be treated like the winner, and he's actually going to get a bigger fight because...
Well, he's dropping down. He's dropping back down to cruiserweight.
I kind of thought he might.
Yeah, I mean, you know. And not that... I mean, because, you know, if you're fighting Antonio Tarver to a draw, and I mean, not that Tarver's not like a, you know...
I mean, hell, Steve Cunningham should take out B.J. Flores.
That would be awesome.
I mean, BJ, I don't know how to cut off the ring. Flores, remember, he's in the corner. How am I supposed to do that?
He won't stand still. I'm trying to punch him, and he just keeps moving. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
I've only, you know, been in the Olympics and stuff. I don't know how to cut off a ring. I mean, this is different stuff, you know.
Hey, my God.
If you learn basic boxing is how to cut off the ring. And
I mean, sometimes when you hear this stuff in the corner, it's priceless. The trainer's, okay, his father, I think it was, well, you got to cut off the ring. Well, how am I supposed to do that? It's like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me. Really? You know?
Unbelievable.
Like, no, see, that's it. Okay, Steve Cunningham going back down to Cruiser.
Yeah.
Put him on the PBC with B.J. Flores and beat him up.
That's right. And then Tarver's free to take steroids because his career is pretty much going to be done.
I
can't imagine coming out at 47, 48 coming back, you know.
But anyway, Tony Thompson, he's got to be like 44, 45. I can't believe. Why do boxing commissions give these guys licenses?
Well, it's not even that. It's not just on TV. Why is this on TV? The same, you know, look, if Amir Mansour wants to fight, go ahead and let him fight. That's great. Let him get his head smashed in.
But don't put it on our...
I don't want to watch it.
Yeah.
I don't need to see Tony Thompson, you know? I mean, yeah, I don't get it, you know?
I mean, hell, Vladimir Klitschko had to beat him up twice.
Right. I mean, is the PBC this saturated? I mean, already? You're already this saturated? Come on.
And let's face it, Malik Scott should be getting a better fight because he did beat Steve Cunningham on HBO, of all places, by the way. I mean, that fight actually took place on HBO. He should be getting a better fight than a guy like Tony Thompson. I mean, if you're going to award a guy for beating somebody, this is not his reward. You know, you should be stepping up the level of this competition.
Right.
See, I can support the people that have been criticizing the PBC because each time we talk about these fights, there are reasons for open criticism.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, anyway, and I know we got, speaking of the PBC, on Halloween, what a scary time, we have a NBC Sports card.
Right, Jermell Charlo, October 31st, NBCSports.net, that Saturday, Jermell Charlo versus Joachim Alcine, 10 rounds, junior middleweights. Also on that card, Tony Harrison versus Cecil McCalla, 10 rounds, junior middleweights.
Mm-hmm. And they're starting that at 11 p.m. Eastern time. I like prime time fights, but for everybody in the East,
yeah,
11 o'clock? Really? I mean,
yeah,
why?
Because what is that, 9? That's 9 in Texas. I mean, why not start this at 7 or something like that, and that way we can get it at 9?
I have no earthly idea.
Because I got to be honest, the world revolves around the East Coast. It's just the way it is.
Just the way it is. But yeah, 11 o'clock, I'm like, and when I first saw that, I'm thinking, okay, this has got to be in California somewhere. And then I heard it was in Texas. I'm like, it really doesn't make sense.
Right. And also, too, in Florida, there was supposed to be a fight. Felix Verdejo was supposed to fight Janilson Dos Santos, but that has been scrapped, and we'll tell you about that more in the news and rumors.
Okay.
And on BN Sports on Halloween also, Jose Zepeda versus Jose Alfaro, 10 rounds, lightweights. And then Cesar Vasquez versus Carlos Diaz, 10 rounds, junior lightweights. And that'll be on BN Sports. And that is it.
Yep, that's it.
Light weekend, boy.
Yeah.
Light weekend.
Yeah.
So we move on. We move forward. Let's talk about our history lesson this week, going deep back to 1974, October 30th. You remember this one?
Absolutely, I do, because it was 2 days after my birthday, and man, what a way to celebrate a birthday!
Your birthday's coming up. I had no idea.
On the 28th, man.
Man, so, yeah. 27 yeah. again. How about that?
That's right. Yeah.
Muhammad Ali versus George Foreman, the Rumble in the Jungle.
Yep.
60,000 people. 60,000 people packed the stadium in Kinshasa, Zaire to watch Muhammad Ali regain the heavyweight championship from George Foreman. You know, prior to this fight, George Foreman just massacred former Ali conqueror Joe Frazier. Nobody gave Ali that much of a chance against a younger, stronger, unbeaten George Foreman.
George Foreman back then was the Triple G of the heavyweight division. He was absolutely annihilating everybody.
Just an absolute monster, man.
You know? And, when this fight was created, everybody said, oh, my God, George is going to kill him. And
that collective groan, like, oh, that's
yeah.
bad. Yeah.
And, boy, it did not happen that way.
This is great. This event was actually one of Don King's first ventures as a pro boxing promoter. This is kind of the one that really put him on the map.
Right.
He managed to get Ali and Foreman to sign separate contracts saying they would fight for him. If he could get a $5 million purse, they'll put the fight together. However, King did not have the money, so he began looking outside the country to sponsor, you know, to sponsor the event. Zaire's dictator Mobutu Sese asked for the fight to be held in his country, eager for the publicity for such a high-profile event. You know, King pulled together a consortium that included a Panamanian company called Resnelia Investment and the Hemdale Film Corporation, a British company founded by producer John Daly. Video Techniques Incorporated of New York and Don King Productions were also involved. Although King is most closely associated with the fight, Hemdale and Video Techniques Incorporated, with whom King was a director, were the official co-promoters of the fight. So that's pretty interesting. I mean, he put it together, and he wasn't actually – they were co-promoters, so pretty interesting. Yeah. Don King, the story is actually fascinating with King with this whole thing because he didn't have $5 million. He didn't have it, you know. That was just the thing. And then he had to go find it. I mean, he had to really, like, move heaven and earth. And everything that could possibly go wrong with this fight went wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we'll talk about Foreman being cut and everything like that. But when the two fighters actually arrived in Africa, you know, people loved Ali. The African people, Africa loves Ali. Mm-hmm. And they loved him all over the world. And everywhere they went, they shouted, "Ali Boumaye," which affectionately translates into "Ali, kill him."
Yeah.
Foreman had a German shepherd that went everywhere with him. And apparently the story goes that apparently the African people were actually scared of, you know, big dogs like that, like German shepherds, because that's what the police apparently used.
Right.
So this didn't help George out in the public. You know, the public didn't like George at all. And George couldn't really get it. He says, you know, he's as black as I am. Why don't they like me? I don't understand this. It's just Ali was just – he knew how to deal with people, you know. People loved him, you know.
That's right.
He pulled out every possible mental games in preparation for this fight, including sending witch doctors and voodoo specialists to George's camps. George Foreman suffered a cut in training, which, you know, as he's sending voodoo doctors and everything like that, you know, this has got to be playing on your mind. Then you get cut, you know.
Yeah.
Now, this is a big deal, especially with Don King, because the fight was actually delayed for 6 weeks.
It was supposed to happen a lot earlier. Yeah,
yeah, 6 weeks in September. Yeah. It was supposed to happen in September. He gets cut, and then, you know, it's like, so everything. So now Don King has to keep all this stuff together. You know, he has to keep the leader happy. He's got to keep, you know, Mobutu, who's a dictator, by the way, in Zaire. He's got to keep him happy, you know, so good luck with that. And then he's got a, you know, he had a concert planned. James Brown was going to be there, and there was a bunch of other people that were going to be there. Concert actually went off as scheduled in September.
Right.
It was a 3-day concert, and then they had to wait 6 more weeks for the fight.
Right.
Now, luckily for Don King and all parties involved, the fight actually went off. Now that the fight is finally here, when the bell rang, man, Ali began the fight using straight right-hand leads. Which really seems to confuse Foreman. However, in the second round, he employed something that nobody was really used to seeing. He laid on the ropes and seemed to just let Foreman hit him. However, Ali was using his defense, so Foreman was hitting gloves, arms, you know, nothing really, not getting any real meaningful shots. This is what Ali called the rope-a-dope.
Yep, that's where it was invented, right there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and as soon as Foreman seemed to stop punching, Ali would counter with straight punches, then cover back up and let Foreman punch himself out again.
Yep.
Employing this strategy, Ali rocked Foreman in the fourth round a couple of times and a couple of times in the fifth. Foreman was really starting to tire and punch himself out. In the eighth round, Ali pounced as Foreman tried to pin Ali on the ropes, landing several right hooks over Foreman's jab, followed by a 5-punch combination, which I'll never forget. You know, and if you saw that, you'll never forget it.
Of course.
Culminating in a left hook that brought Foreman's head up into position and a hard, straight right hand to the face that caused Foreman to stumble on the canvas. I could see him just as I'm telling you this, I could just see him falling to the canvas. He's got that one arm on the canvas, and he does that little dive or whatever. Foreman did get up at the count of 9, but referee Zach Clayton stopped the bout with 2 seconds remaining in the round. This may have been one of the most tactical fights I've ever seen. Ali completely set him up in this fight. I don't know where the strategy came from. To this day, I don't know if it was something Dundee created or Ali himself created. And, you know that Ali employed the strategy because he's, you know, his legs were shot, and I think he knew that. You know,
yeah.
He knew he wasn't the same fighter. He couldn't use that movement. But those punches, you know, were hitting him, you know, on the arms, on the, you know, on the shoulders, the arms. And he just never, you know, and as soon as he'd stop, man, Ali was so quick, he still had the hand speed, that he just fired off those shots and would rattle Foreman every time.
No, I have a feeling I don't know who created it, but I have a feeling this was an Angelo Dundee creation because, you know, Dundee was known as the best trainer back then.
Yeah.
And I would suspect that Angelo was the one that came up with this.
You know, and he, you know, I tell you, it was just something to watch, man, because you're watching him getting pounded on those ropes, but, you know, and by Foreman, who's got sledgehammers in his fists. I mean, and you don't, you know, but Foreman, again, landed only arm punches, never really went to the body so much, you know, but Ali did a great job covering up, too. I mean, some of those punches made it through, but, you know, when you see them coming, you know they're coming, you could take them a lot better than when you don't see them, you know. Just an amazing display, man.
Yep.
And this fight, you know, after watching Foreman demolish Joe Frazier, and he demolished Joe Frazier. And that was somebody, you know, so when this fight was made, there was like that collective gasp, like, oh, my God, are you serious? This is, I don't even want to watch this fight, you know.
Yep.
This fight only added to Ali's legacy as the greatest. You know, and as far as Foreman goes, you know, he went on to do something pretty special, too.
Yeah.
And I would say he went on to accomplish the most amazing feat in boxing, and one that will never be duplicated. And that's going to be our history lesson next week.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And Foreman, yeah, Foreman was pretty amazing, too. And after next week, we'll talk more about it. But
yeah.
I think that, you know, that's something that will never, ever be duplicated. But
oh, absolutely not. I know what you're referring to, and I mean, no other fighter will ever pull that off.
Never. 20 years to, almost 20 years to the day.
Yeah.
So, pretty interesting.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll talk about that more next week. Let's talk about our fantasy fight now, man. This is a good one. Triple G, Gennady Golovkin versus Roy Jones Jr., at middleweight.
Russian Roy
in the Kazakhstan.
Yeah.
Triple G.
Oh, and for those people that did not order the pay-per-view because they didn't show this on the replay of the fight, in between fights, and this is how we decided to come up with it.
Yeah.
Lampley asked Jones, he said, well, Roy, don't you wish you were 28 and back at middleweight? You could fight him. And Roy had a look on his face like, I don't think so. Like, I don't want any part of that, you know. So that's how we came up with this. Anyway,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
In his prime, man, Roy Jones Jr., man, was virtually untouchable.
Yeah.
At middleweight, he was untouchable at super middleweight. He was untouchable at light heavyweight.
Right.
You know, he manhandled James Toney like no one had ever done before or since. He was so quick. His movement was so fluid. He gave everybody problems.
Right.
It didn't matter if you were a pure boxer or not. He was so unorthodox. He was so quick. He was like the Michael Jordan of boxing. He really was.
That's right. That's right.
Triple G, known for his power and boxing ability, which he brought an absolutely new wrinkle to his game that we saw in his last two fights against Willie Monroe and David Lemieux.
Yeah,
Triple G is the current middleweight champion, has demolished everybody he's faced.
That's right.
None of those fights have even been close.
No.
So let's talk about this for a minute, man. So let's rank them here. Chin, who do you give, Triple G or Roy Jones?
Well, again, Roy has been down. Triple G hasn't. So based on that alone, I've got to give it to Triple G. We've never even really seen him hurt.
Right. I agree. I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because even at middleweight, I think he was down. Wasn't it Lou Duvall, or was it at super middleweight where Lou Duvall caught him?
I don't know which division it was, but I know he's been down at least three times.
Right. So I definitely I definitely think Triple G.
Yeah.
Speed, I don't think there's really any question here. I think
no, Roy Jones.
Roy Jones.
Yeah.
Now the power, you know, I've got this a push, and you can make a case for Triple G. For me, it's a push because Roy Jones knocks out a lot of people. And the power, if you're just talking about raw power, I think it's Triple G. But if you're talking about, you know, Roy knocks you out with a punch you don't see. And so he definitely has power. You know, he also knocked Virgil Hill out with that body shot, but that was
I'll never forget that. I mean, Virgil Hill just folded up like a pretzel.
That was ridiculous, man. Never shot. So what do you think here with the power?
I would give it to Triple G, but I'm not going to argue with you as far as the push goes, because, you know, Triple G, man, he's devastating when he hurts you. That's why I was shocked when David Lemieux was actually able to get up and continue when he got knocked down, because most of the time when somebody gets knocked down by Triple G, they don't get up.
Yeah, and I think it was especially that shot he hit him when he was down. That shot when he was on his knees and he hit him when he was down.
Yeah.
The only reason he got up from that shot because he saw it coming.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because that was vicious.
Yeah.
Now, what about boxing ability? Who do you give this to?
I think you got to give it to Roy, although the more I see Triple G, the more I'm impressed with his boxing ability. But if we're doing this in Roy Jones' prime, I've got to give it to Roy.
I do, too, yeah. That's the rub on this, too, is that, like, you know, you'll take a match like this, like Triple G and Roy Jones, not after Triple G's career in his prime, but you're taking it, you know, as what we classify during his prime, which he may not have even hit yet. Who knows? So who knows what's in store for him and everything like that. So,
right.
But for the purpose of, you know, I think boxing ability, we know what Roy Jones, I think we have to give it to Jones, though.
That's right.
Now, as far as the fight, here's how I see the fight unfolding, and you might see it different. I'd like to hear your opinion on it.
Okay.
I think Roy Jones' speed will give Triple G a lot of problems in this fight, man. I think Roy has fought a lot of fighters like Triple G in the sense of that same style, you know.
But yeah, but
I don't think Triple G has ever seen the kind of speed that Roy brings to the table.
That's what I was just going to say. Triple G has never faced anybody like Roy Jones.
No, and not to mention he was faster. Roy Jones was faster at middleweight than any other weight he fought at.
That's right.
I mean, the lighter you are, the faster you are. To me, there's no scenario that I can see that Triple G can win this fight against Jones. Jones was just too fast and too unorthodox. I don't see Triple G getting any kind of rhythm going. I think that's the big thing, is that Roy would be able to keep him off his rhythm. I don't see Roy knocking out Triple G.
No, I think this is a 9-3, 8-4 kind of unanimous decision for Jones.
I see him cruising to an easy unanimous decision, though.
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, that's what I'm saying. 9-3, 8-4, something like that. And I think the Russian Roy.
Red Roy.
Red Roy, keeps it going. And,
right. The American version of Roy Jones.
Yeah. But no, I'll never forget that. For those that watch the pay-per-view, if you record it, go back and look at the look on his face when Lampley poses the questions. Like, he's like, oh, no, I don't want no part of that. You know, it's like just another fighter that says no to Triple G. You know? So there you go.
There it is. So we're going to make this unanimous here, because the computer also sees the fight, Roy Jones winning 80% of the time. This was the interesting part about it, though. All Roy Jones wins coming by way of knockout.
I don't see that, but okay.
Yeah, I don't see it either. Like I said, man, I think that his speed confuses him, and I think he's able to outbox him, and that confuses him. I don't see a knockout, though, put it that way.
No. So. And I think that, really, to be honest with you, I think that's the only way anybody is going to beat Gennady Golovkin today, is if there was another fighter in his weight class that did a lot of the same things that Roy Jones does. And there's nobody around in boxing in his division today that is capable of doing what Roy Jones did back then.
Well, you know, and Willie Monroe, I think, had the right idea. He's the right type of fighter. But Willie Monroe just didn't have the skill set to compete. You know what I mean?
No,
he just didn't have that skill set. You know, but he's the right type of fighter.
Yeah.
Arislandi Lara should move up to middleweight and fight this guy.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, he's got the skill set. He's got the skill set to give him problems. He's got the skill set to beat him. Now, whether he beats him or not, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But Lara has the skill set to give him trouble, all kind of trouble.
No, I want to see that fight one day. And that's why I hope all these lawsuits get settled. Because we're missing out on so many fights that could be made. I mean, and I'll talk about it more in news and rumors. One of the lawsuits got totally dismissed, and we'll talk about that later. But
yeah.
I wish a lot of these lawsuits would just either get settled or be thrown out, because, you know, we're missing out on fights that we should see. Triple G and his lawyer Laura would be a fascinating fight. But it's never going to happen with the political landscape and with all these court things going on. We're never going to see that.
No, and unfortunately it's always been like this, you know,
I mean,
where you have the different promoters and everything like that. And let's go ahead and talk about that. Let's move on to news and rumors now.
Okay.
And go ahead and talk about that lawsuit.
Yeah, Bob Arum, top rank, had his lawsuit thrown out of court that he filed against Al Heyman and the PBC.
You mean a $300 million lawsuit didn't go through?
No, the $100 million lawsuit.
Yeah.
That Arum, the only one that's still active, apparently, is the Golden Boy lawsuit. That's the one that Oscar's asking for $300 million.
Yeah, let me tell you what, that just lost a bunch of legs, too, given the fact that they just dismissed this one.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if you saw that, because you didn't mention it before we went on the air, but last week that got thrown out of court, so there you go.
There it is, man.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Pritchard Colon. Last week, of course, we all know the tragedy that happened there. He was in a coma. Pritchard Colon is off sedatives now and now breathing on his own. Doctors have told the family they've done everything they can, and now they're just waiting for him to wake up. So he's got no breathing machines, nothing like that, nothing keeping him, in the sedatives now. So he's off of those, so he should be able to wake up. Unfortunately, he's still in a coma, so hopefully everybody's praying for him. Our thoughts and everything are with him, and hopefully he comes out of this, man.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, sad story, and hopefully comes out of this, man, is able to live a normal life, you know.
Yep.
All right. So let's talk about our train wreck of the week. And the train wreck of the week belongs to Ringside Robbie.
I screwed up, folks.
You screwed up. You screwed up big time. You let all of our listeners down.
Yeah. Last week,
explain yourself.
Last week I reported that the Andy Lee, Billy Joe Saunders fight had been canceled for the fourth time because, let's face it, this thing, it's had more cancellations than contracts. And I got bad information. The fight is still on. It's set for December 19th. So,
Manchester, England.
Yep. So, my bad.
Yeah, you're bad. You let everyone down.
Yep.
Everyone associated with Ringside Reporter, you let us down. You let our fans down. You let our listeners down. You
there
let everybody
go.
Down. I hope you're pleased.
Nobody's perfect. So
well, you
we
can
go.
Say that again. You're not just whistling Dixie there, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
Well, hey, look, man. That's why they call it rumors. All right. Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah, that's right.
Except me, of course, because I wasn't involved in train wreck of the week. But
I'm sure you're going to get a train wreck somewhere down the road.
Well, I don't think so because I do the show, so I'll never implicate myself.
Okay, all right.
Lisa's just informed me that every week is my train wreck of the week.
Okay, there you go. All right.
All right. Pacquiao, as we talked about earlier, Pacquiao is set to retire after he's set to fight on April 9th, and he's actually set to retire after that fight. Now, as far as some of his potential opponents, as we talked about earlier, Terrence Crawford wants to be that guy. I know HBO wants him to be that guy.
Well, for whatever reason, Bob is the one that made this statement to HBO. Look, if Terrence wins, he gets this fight.
Well, according to Michael Kotz, though, Pacquiao's advisor, man, he's not too thrilled about that. Terrence Crawford apparently is not his first choice.
Okay, who would Manny like to fight?
Nobody's saying. But they're saying, now Bob is saying, it sounds like such a process here. Apparently, according to Bob Arum, they've got to talk to Pacquiao. It's selecting his next fight is this big, it sounds like this big deal. Pacquiao's in the Philippines, I guess doing this Congress stuff or whatever he does.
Right.
So he's in the Philippines, right?
And then they say, well, we have to get the fight to him. We have to get the Crawford fight to him. So they're going to mail a copy of the Crawford fight to Konts, and then Konts is then going to get it to Manny Pacquiao to watch because they don't really know if he saw the fight or not.
Okay.
Then they're going to wait till November 7th for the Bradley Rios fight, do the same thing there, and sometime before the end of November, Konts and Bob Arum are going to take a plane ride down to the Philippines and talk to Manny.
Why is it so difficult?
I don't understand why.
First of all, with the internet, give me a break.
Yeah, seriously?
Yeah, and look, I don't have internet
in the Philippines.
And let's be honest, I don't want to see Tim Bradley Manny Pacquiao 3. Give me a break.
No, nobody wants to see that. I sure don't want to see Rios and Pacquiao 2.
No. And I don't want to see Marquez Pacquiao 5 either, okay?
They said that Marquez is definitely out. They said that's what Arum says.
Yeah.
So knowing Pacquiao, they'll probably fight again. I don't want to see Marquez. Terrence Crawford is really the only logical guy here. Him and Amir Khan.
I would love to see Amir Khan take the beating of his life, but
it sounds like Amir Khan has talked himself out of that fight again.
Yeah. And, like Floyd said, the guy doesn't keep his mouth shut.
He doesn't shut up.
He
doesn't shut up. Well, the good news about that is that may open the door for Akell Brook because that's the only big name out there for Khan now.
I would rather see Akell Brook fight Amir Khan than Diego Chavez.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. But I'd like to see Khan fight Keith Thurman if he's indeed under the PBC banner or whatever. I mean, he's managed by Al Haymon.
Well, I know they're trying to put together the Thurman-Porter fight for December.
Yeah,
so.
That's going to be a dynamite fight, too.
Yeah.
So those are the guys on the short list. Now, why we have to wait to see what Bradley does, I don't want to see Tim Bradley again.
Look,
I don't want to see Tim Bradley fight Brandon Rios.
Timothy Bradley is going to beat, if Timothy Bradley is a real Timothy Bradley, he'll beat Brandon Rios. But what is that going to prove?
If this fight is close, Tim Bradley needs to hang it up.
Exactly. After all, he's holding a title that should belong to Saddam Ali.
Yeah.
I mean, why does this kid have to continuously wait?
What happened there? I haven't heard a thing on there whether he decided to take some payola or what to step aside. I mean, you know he had to.
Yeah, no, he took a briefcase full,
A briefcase full?
Like Don King used to do when fighters used to sue him, show up at that guy's house. Here's a briefcase, Okay, lawsuit goes away,
He would show up with $50,000 cash in a briefcase. They were suing him for millions.
Anyway, yeah.
They would take it. They would just take it. Idiot.
Yeah.
That's so great.
I mean, if you're Timothy Bradley, that's what you do. You show up with a briefcase. Here you go. Okay. No
Don
problem.
King is such a gangster.
Yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
The two opponents that he'll, that's got to be it. It's either got to be, what's his name, Amir Khan or Terrence Crawford. Those are the only two that make sense.
Yeah.
That's
as I said earlier, I don't mind seeing Crawford. I don't want to see Crawford. Not that I'm against Crawford, because I think Crawford has other fighters he can actually fight.
Yeah, but don't you think that's a big money fight for Crawford? I mean, that's a big money fight, and it's a stepping stone. And it's also because I think Crawford will get him. I think Crawford gets him. I don't think it's a pushover fight by any stretch.
As I stated earlier, I have no problem with it because it'll pass the torch.
Yeah.
So I'm not totally against it. I would just rather see Terrence Crawford fight other people, to continue building up his resume and collecting belts.
Let me ask you this, man. Do you think Terrence Crawford versus Victor Postol is a better fight than Pacquiao and Crawford?
I think it'll be a more competitive fight because Postol's been more active.
Okay. I think I think the Pacquiao, it's tough, man. It's tough because when you think about this, you think about the old Pacquiao. And I don't know how much of that guy is left. You don't know because it's hard to tell against the guy like Mayweather because he didn't fight. He didn't fight. You know, he didn't stand there and fight. And he didn't.
Realistically, that fight should have been called off.
Yeah.
And Pacquiao should have had the surgery. And we should be talking about Mayweather-Pacquiao for April or May of next year instead of talking about, you know, Terrence Crawford or Amir Khan or whoever it's going to be for April of
right.
next year. We should be building up the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight for next year. I mean, if Pacquiao was legitimately hurt, that's what they should have done. They should have called the fight off, allowed him to have the surgery, and then Floyd and Manny have their last fight together next year, and whoever wins, wins, whoever loses, loses, and they both retire at the end of the fight. That's the way it should have been done.
Right. I think in terms of what's best for boxing, Terrence Crawford versus Pacquiao. Okay,
because
that's that passing of the torch kind of fight, you know. And if he wins, he wins. He goes out a winner. But
yeah.
If he loses, you know, hey, the torch is passed. You know.
And realistically, folks, that's probably what's going to happen.
But now, what's best money wise is going to be Pacquiao and Amir Khan. To me, that's a better money fight. Nobody knows who Terrence Crawford is, aside from us.
Yeah,
I mean,
or
10,000 people in Nebraska.
Unless
you live outside of Nebraska, you don't know who he is.
Yeah.
You know, over there he's like a household name or something. But outside of Nebraska, nobody knows who this guy is. They know he's good. It's kind of like, you remember when Sugar Ray fought Terry Norris?
Yeah.
All right, so Terry Norris was largely unknown. He really was. Nobody knew who Terry Norris was until he put it on Sugar Ray that night.
That's
you
right.
You know, I mean, he put it on Sugar Ray. And nobody knew who he was up until that point. But everybody said when they was fighting, this guy is deadly. This guy is better than Sugar Ray was, you know, back when Sugar Ray was fighting in his prime.
Right.
You know, everybody said this guy is something special. But nobody knew him until he had that moment, you know. And that's for Terrence Crawford also. That would be a Terrence Crawford thing. In terms of pay-per-view numbers,
yeah,
him and Amir Khan would smash him and Crawford. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And let's face it, if Bob needs money to put this together, I mean, he could go to Warren Buffett, you know? I mean, Buffett is obviously a Crawford supporter, so,
right.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know. Yeah,
absolutely.
So,
why not?
No, I do think, despite my opinion, I do think the Pacquiao-Crawford fight will probably happen. And again, I don't have a major problem with it. I just want to see Crawford, you know, fight Postol, because I think that's going to be a fascinating fight. I would love to see those two get together.
It's interesting, man, because Crawford definitely needs Pacquiao. Pacquiao doesn't need Crawford.
That's right.
And that's what he would need to become a pay-per-view star. That's what they're looking for. My money's on that fight happening. I'm with you. I think that Crawford and Pacquiao fight is going to happen.
Yep.
But, you know, unless Manny says, hey, I want to fight Amir Khan. Unless that fight's off the table, who knows? Who knows what Amir's doing?
Well, the problem you have with a guy like Amir Khan is he does not. And look, you think we're making fun of the dude. And, yeah, in some sense we are. But when you're negotiating fights, it's best for all parties involved to keep things quiet. And Amir Khan doesn't know how to do that.
He's got diarrhea in the mouth.
He has to spout off every chance he gets. And look, Floyd even came out and said, I was interested in fighting the dude, but every time we tried to negotiate, he would make everything public.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, that's what kills him. You know, I mean, that's what kills Amir Khan. That's why he doesn't have any big fights. That's why he's over there fighting Chris Algieri, you know, instead of somebody big, you know.
You cannot – look, I love a fighter who talks and things like that, but you cannot do that when people are trying to put a fight together, you know, because contracts are contracts. They have to be worked out behind closed doors.
Right.
And you can't have a fighter going on social media every day spouting off negotiation points.
Hey, we did this. We did this. Yeah, I mean, it's
just
ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and Khan said he walked away from the table because he said that Pacquiao's people didn't want to play ball, and Aram was like, I don't know what he's talking about. You know, that's the way to answer that question. I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
You know, it's just stupid. He's his own worst enemy. you know.
And that's why, that's probably Amir Khan, who is a very talented fighter, will probably never get a big name opponent because he does not know how to keep his mouth shut.
Right. I agree. Incidentally, a funny thing, there was a video going around. It shows Amir Khan hitting the speed bag. All right. And
okay.
Then he's in and he's doing well. He's a professional boxer, so you know he's gonna be able to hit a speed bag, right?
Right.
All right, so he stops the speed bag and then he takes a drink. It looks like Muscle Milk or something like that, or something like a little plastic bottle or something.
Right.
He puts the bottle on his wrist and then lifts the bottle up or whatever and starts hitting it like he would a speed bag, and the bottle's just going round and round and round. And if you didn't know any better, you'd be like, that's a trick or whatever. There's no way he's doing it. He's actually doing it, man. It looks awesome, man. It's really cool.
Right.
Very cool.
But, no, Amir Khan, he's his own worst enemy. Who knows how many big fights he's actually talked his way out of.
Yeah, oh, probably all of them. You know what I mean? He hasn't really had a big fight,
you know?
So probably all of them.
Him and Cal Brook is going to make tons of money, especially if it's in the UK. Him and Floyd Mayweather would have made a lot of money. You would have put him on the map. Him and Pacquiao would put him on the map, but the guy does not know how to shut up.
Could you imagine him in Amir Khan in negotiation with Cal Brook? So you got Amir Khan on one side and Eddie Hearn on the other. What a train wreck that's going to be, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Gosh.
You know?
It boggles the mind, that's for sure.
If I'm Cal Brook, I get rid of Eddie Hearn as my promoter, man, because he's not helping your career any.
No, he's really not.
But I think the Crawford-Pacquiao fight will happen, and, we'll see what happens when April shows up.
Absolutely. Let's talk about something strange here, man. This is a fight set for December 19th. Bryant Jennings versus Luis Ortiz, both heavyweights set for December 19th. Now, why is this interesting? It's interesting because Bryant Jennings just turned down this fight. Luis Ortiz just fought on the undercard of the Triple G, Lemieux.
That's right.
And he fought a heavyweight or whatever and, looked okay. They're talking about him like he's a second coming or something, but he didn't look that great to me. But Bryant Jennings turned down this fight. Now he's picking up the fight for December 19th. I think Jennings had a chance to fight on a pay-per-view card, get some pub, get some recognition, didn't do it, now decides to take an HBO date, I guess, for December 19th. And I think Bryant Jennings wins this fight. It was a winnable fight then. I think it's a winnable fight now. But we'll see what happens. But just bizarre that he didn't take the fight, last week, so...
How stupid can you be when a fighter who had the opportunity to take this fight on a pay-per-view card so everybody could see you, and then two months later, okay, now I'll take it? You know?
Makes no sense. Makes no sense at all. Now, speaking of that pay-per-view card, Triple G versus David Lemieux, everybody was really wondering about the buy rate. Everybody was so curious about the buy rate. Well, it's out. And it's not very good. 150,000 buys. Even Shane Mosley saying, wow, that's it. are you surprised by this?
Very surprised, because those of us that follow boxing, this tells me not even a lot of hardcore fans bought this fight.
Yeah.
Now, as we've discussed in previous shows, should this have been a pay-per-view fight? Hell no. This should have been a regular HBO date. This was not a pay-per-view caliber kind of fight. I understand why they wanted to put it there.
Yeah.
But a lot of boxing fans didn't support this guy, and now it's going to be awful for future negotiations because now, see, fighters have been avoiding him because of his skill in the ring. Now they're going to avoid him to say, well, you're not a pay-per-view attraction. Why should I fight you?
Well, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, 150,000 is not a lot. I mean, Shane Mosley and Ricardo Mayorga, I didn't hear their pay-per-view numbers. But they had to break 30,000 just to break even.
you know, 150,000. I mean, we're thinking 200,000, 300,000, somewhere in there. That's what, realistically, that's what I was thinking. You know, well, 300,000 would have been excellent.
Let's put this in perspective. The first time Canelo Alvarez was on pay-per-view, he got over 300,000. The first time Floyd was on pay-per-view, he got close to 400,000. For a pay-per-view debut, this is one of the worst that you could ever have.
Yeah, this is bad.
And in order to sell a pay-per-view, you've got to make it available for casual fans. And a lot of casual fans that don't follow boxing, let's face it, they're not going to know who David Lemieux is. So that's why it's important to have, when you're going to debut somebody in a pay-per-view setting, you've got to have a fighter on the other side of the ring that people know. Like when Terrence Crawford fights Manny Pacquiao, everybody knows who Manny Pacquiao is, so they're going to buy that card just for Manny Pacquiao, but they're going to learn who Terrence Crawford is.
Right. I mean, you know, I was pretty surprised when those numbers came out. I really was. Like I said, man, 300,000 would have been good. That would have been excellent. You know, that was the range where that's what I thought.
Look, I cannot blame Golden Boy or K2 or HBO because they made the fight affordable. It wasn't too expensive. I mean, hell, I would rather pay $60 for a fight than $75, or $100. So they made it worthwhile for people to buy. I just don't understand why people didn't support this guy.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting, man.
But yet almost 21,000 showed up at the Garden, so, you know.
That's what kills you, you know. It's like, wow, I mean, 21,000, I mean, yeah, I mean, 21,000 showed up at the Garden to watch this fight, but hardly anybody watched it on TV, you know.
And normally when Triple G fights on HBO, he gets very high ratings, I'm perplexed by, look, I understand that this should not have been a pay-per-view fight, but I'm very perplexed at boxing fans here.
Let me ask you this, too. I mean, why did they? It was, the fight was $60.
Yeah.
All right, I remember the whatchamacallit, Roman Martinez and Orlando Salido.
Yeah.
When that was on pay-per-view, that was $39. That was $40.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Why not just start the fight there? Why do you have to go up to $60? $60 is not chump change, man. I mean, that's a lot of money for a lot of people, you know. And especially, when you got a $150 cable bill, now it's $200.
I'm assuming it was because of the purses involved. Because I think Lemieux made what, $2 million, and I forget what Triple G got.
I thought he got like $2 million also, wasn't it?
Or something like that.
It was close. They were both close together.
Yeah. I don't know. I have no idea, but it blows my mind because this guy, he deserves the same kind of platform that Canelo and Cotto and all these other guys have. And now this is going to hurt him negotiating wise because the winner of Cotto Canelo.
I know what you're about to say, because they'll have the upper hand. I think they might have had it anyway, but. You wonder if the pay-per-view business is going to be hurt because of what happened with in May with the Mayweather and Pacquiao thing. Because, honestly, man, that left a bad taste in everybody's mouth.
Yes, it did. And
I could see people saying, just like with the, when MLB, if you remember years ago when they went on strike and they ended the season, a lot of people said, hey, you know what, screw baseball. I'm not watching it anymore. I'm not paying for it.
Eric, I think we're gonna have the answer to our question on November 21st.
Yeah.
Because we're gonna find out if the pay-per-view business has been hurt forever, because we'll be able to find out by the numbers that Cotto and Canelo can master. If they get lower than expected pay-per-view numbers, then we know the pay-per-view model has been permanently damaged by Mayweather Pacquiao.
What is the what would be good numbers for them?
For those two, as popular as they both are, I would say at least a half a million.
See, I'm thinking, I would be, you know, I think it'll be interesting. I think it'll be real interesting because you kind of wonder if, something just tells me 300,000. You know what I mean?
Well, and you know what? If we get 300,000 for that, then you're going to have the answer to your question. Because if that fight gets 300,000, then we know the pay-per-view model is permanently damaged because of Mayweather-Pacquiao.
Right. Because nobody wants to pay for that again. You want to see people fighting on pay-per-view. You want to see two people that are going to entertain you and go at it and stuff like that. I mean,
and look, for those of us who bought the Lemieux-Golovkin pay-per-view, we weren't bored at all. That was a very entertaining card.
The entire card was really good, I thought.
They will never be two fighters that come along again and rip the public off the way Mayweather and Pacquiao did. So for those that are pissed off because they got burnt in May, that'll never happen again.
You know, but as a boxing fan, you're kind of used to it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've seen this stuff before where we've had, like, lousy pay-per-views and stuff like that, or bad decisions and lousy pay-per-views.
Yeah.
You know, when you start hitting a million buys, 2 million buys, 3 million buys, et cetera, those are casual people watching that fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And when a casual person gets ripped off, they have a tendency to say, hey, you're not going to, rip me off again.
Right.
And I
don't blame them for saying that, but I honestly believe that, we have fighters in the business now who, if they're going to put on a pay-per-view fight, it's going to be entertaining.
Yeah.
You're not going to, and I don't think you'll ever see another $100 fight,
Well, I think you will. I think it'll be a long, long time before that, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it'll eventually go back to the way it was, but I think what you're going to see is a lull. You're going to see that lull because I don't think it's ever going to go back to where it was.
If Cotto and Canelo don't get a half a million, then I think you've got the answer to your question about the success of pay-per-views.
Right.
Because if Pacquiao fights Crawford, that's not going to do no half a million.
No, well, look at Mayweather's last fight. I mean, what was it, 300,000 or something crazy?
Yeah,
It was something that was just back to where he was before he fought Pacquiao.
But Andre Berto is nobody was going to buy that anyway.
No. But, that being said, I mean, Andre Berto is about the same name as David Lemieux.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think November 21st will actually answer a lot of our pay-per-view questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about Felix Verdejo here for a minute. He was supposed to fight this weekend. He pulls out of his October 31st fight due to a hand injury. He's just had surgery on his left hand and apparently is having some discomfort, had some discomfort during training, which caused him to pull out of the fight. So,
well, they probably ended up putting pins in there, and they may have to go back in and fix them or take them out and put in new ones or whatever.
Not good, man. So he's heading for a little bit of a layoff here. A little bit of a longer layoff here.
Yep.
Very interesting. Now, we talked about the Cotto Canelo fight, and on the undercard of that is supposed to be Andre Ward. Now, Andre Ward and his promoters at Rock Nation are going to need to find another candidate for him to fight. The fighter they chose was named Rohan Murdoch. He's ranked number 6 by the WBO. He's 18-1 with 14 knockouts, and he has been turned down by the Nevada State Athletic Commission, according to West Australian Sports. The NSAC won't agree to sanction the Ward-Murdoch fight. Hey, you know what? Good for them. Good for them. Let me tell you this. I think that, you're looking at Andre Ward, who's murdered just about everybody out there. He went through that Super 6 tournament. Chad Dawson, he's beat people at light heavyweight. He's beat everybody imaginable. And then you're going to put him against Rohan Murdoch, a guy that nobody knows, ranked number 6 by the WBO. Come on, man. He's only got 19 fights. And you're going to put him in against Andre. Get out of here. Come on, man.
Yeah.
And you're going to say, okay, well, Andre Ward's only had 28 fights. Andre Ward has a wealth of experience,
And, look, I used to be an Andre Ward supporter, but I cannot support what he's been doing the last few years. I understand you have disagreements with promoters and you got to go to court and get your way out of that. Well, fine, you did that. You've signed with a new company now. And your first fight back in May was Paul Smith. Okay, I didn't like it, but okay. You beat the crap out of the guy. But yet you're still on this tune-up kick. You're Andre Ward, who some people who are complete idiots want to put you as number one pound for pound.
I got him number one pound to pound. I'm just saying.
You fall into that. I
fall into the idiot category.
You fall in the idiot category because look, if you're gonna have that status, you need to fight people that bring out the best in you. And he doesn't even want to sign his HBO deal unless HBO is gonna agree to let him fight whoever he wants. I hate divas. I hate divas in boxing. Floyd Mayweather, Miguel Cotto, and now Andre Ward. What the hell are you doing?
I agree with you. Not the fact that I'm an idiot. I don't agree with that. However, I do agree with, my wife raised her hand. She agrees that I'm an idiot.
Okay. You
know, what I do agree with, though, is that he should be fighting somebody of substance. He fought Paul Smith. Okay, great. That's a tune-up. You're allowed. It's a tune-up. Now you should fight somebody with a little bit more substance to him.
Especially if you're going to be on a pay-per-view broadcast.
Right. I mean, I want to see a guy with a pulse here. And not that Rohan Murdoch isn't. He's just nowhere near your league. And you know this.
It's pretty bad when the commission itself has to step in and say, no, you're not fighting this guy.
Let me tell you what. I've heard of very few times that the commission actually steps in and says, are you serious? That's suspect. I'll tell you that. Nobody knows this guy. Nobody's heard of this guy. It's just a bad fight.
Look,
what are you doing?
Virgil Hunter and people in Andre Ward's camp, what the hell are you thinking?
Well, I mean, you blame the promoters for this. I mean, they're the ones putting the fights together, the matchmakers and the promoters and everything wanting to put this guy in there. Who thought this guy would be a good idea,
Well, they thought he was a good idea because he's ranked by one of the organization. Who the fuck cares about that?
Right. I mean, yeah, number six for WBO, by the way, number six.
name me a big name fighter that he's actually beaten. I don't even know who the hell this guy is. I mean, congratulations to the Nevada State Athletic Commission, Andre. Before I became train wreck of the week, Andre Ward should have been train wreck. This is ridiculous.
Are you sour because Andre Ward is not the train wreck of the week and you are the train wreck of the week?
No, hopefully Andre Ward.
I still stand by my decision. I still stand by it.
Hopefully Andre Ward does something even more stupid so he I mean, give me a break. You're going to fight. I mean, the only Murdoch I'd ever heard of is the Murdoch that played on the A-team,
that Murdoch.
Give me a break. Fight somebody real, for God's sakes. And why do you have to go to Australia to find him, by the way?
Right.
I mean,
right. So
give me a break.
While Andre Ward was a distant second to Robbie in the train wreck of the week, the close third here in the train wreck of the week was our very own, who the train wreck is named after, Adrian Broner. Nothing is set in stone yet, okay? But multiple sources, and my sources, I'll just go on record saying my sources are vastly different than Robbie, so you could take those to the bank.
Thank you.
Ashley Theophane is set to be Adrian Broner's next opponent.
By the way, ranked number 45 in the world.
Who wins a title and calls out the 45th ranked guy? Who does that? Who does that? How do you even know this guy's name? Nobody knew who this guy was talking about. Absolutely nobody. You had to go and Google it once he said Ashley. You're like, okay, who?
you know, and then
well,
you had to, you know.
Well, because I'm a boxing junkie, as soon as he said Ashley, I knew who it was. I'm like, oh my God, you're serious, right?
I'm like, 45. He's ranked number 45. He's not even ranked. I think he's ranked number 15 in that little belty one or whatever. He's ranked number 15.
Oh, for heavenly sake.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So, Arthur Beterbiev has pulled out of his November 28th fight with a shoulder injury. He was scheduled to fight fellow Russian Igor Mikhalkin. Fight has not yet been rescheduled. But Beterbiev out. A lot of injuries going on, man. You got Verdejo or Beterbiev. Now, speaking of the Russian Arthur Beterbiev, his arch nemesis, Sergey Kovalev, and Jean Pascal are likely to hook it up on January 30th in a rematch that will likely be televised on HBO.
And my question is why? The first one was convincing enough.
Yeah, I don't know what unanswered questions the first one left. I mean, what are we talking about here? I don't understand.
Well, and here's another promoter that ain't doing her client justice. Kathy Duva bailed out of a purse bid. They were going to have
a purse bid.
She called for it, and then they gave it to her, and then she bailed out of it because, let's face it, Al Haymon has got deeper pockets than Kathy Duva.
Right.
And then what does she do? She ties her fighter to one network. I mean, who does that? I mean, in today's TV landscape, you don't tie your fighter to one specific network. You let him fight wherever he can fight.
Well, not only that. I mean, you completely isolate him from every other fighter on the planet. You know what I mean? Just whoever, you know. So, I mean, in him and Ward, Andre Ward, you know, is a big fight, pending that, you know, Ward can get everything straightened out and start fighting again, you know, that's a big fight. But, you know, that's his only fight. You know, so it's a good news, bad news scenario. Yeah, that's his only fight. Instead of fighting,
what happens if he loses that? Okay.
Which he will lose. I firmly believe Andre Ward is going to crush that guy.
Well, Andre Ward better get off of his Miguel Cotto medication and actually fight somebody real.
You know, I don't understand why this fight is taking place. I mean, you know, and there's a bunch of Fonfara is in the light heavyweights. That would be a good – him and Kovalev could hook it up. That would be great.
But
that's what I'm saying. He's tied up, but that's why he can't fight him. You know, there's a ton of people out there, but his manager sucks, you know, so what are you going to do?
I mean,
locked out.
See, this is what I hate about people that don't like Al Haymon. They make him to be like the Darth Vader of boxing. They don't, you know, you either fall in love with a guy and you sign on the dotted line, or if you're on the other side of the fence, you don't want nothing to do with the dude.
Right.
The last time I think I've seen this much hatred for a so-called promoter, let's face it, that's what Al Haymon technically is, even though he says he's not, was when Don King was popular.
And Don King put together some wicked cards, man. King put together those cards, man, back when Tyson was in jail. I mean, he would put together those fights, man. We had four titles. You get a pay-per-view, there's four titles, you know, four titles on the line. They were all good fights.
That's right.
You know.
But I don't know what the hell's wrong with people like Kathy Duva, who seems to hate this guy so much that she's willing to tie her fighters up to one network so they can't fight anywhere else.
Right. Yeah, I don't get it, man. But, you know, I'm hoping that Triple G's not in that same boat. You know, but the flip side of that, there's no good middleweights on the Haymon side.
Well, Triple G is not in the same boat because he's with Tom Loeffler, and Loeffler is not stupid enough to tie his fighters up to one network. I mean, yeah, both his fighters, because he's also one of the managers of Vladimir Klitschko.
Right.
I mean he'll his fighters to fight anywhere, but. On the other hand, we don't really know whether Tom will work with Al.
I don't see why you wouldn't, but there's no real big fight. But, I mean, you know, you got Peter Quill in there. You got Daniel Jacobs. You got a lot of good fighters over there.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean,
Better start to branch out, people.
That's why I want to see all this lawsuit nonsense disappear. Yeah. And I want to lock all the boxing promoters and managers in one room and say, okay, nobody comes out until deals are made so fights can happen.
Right, right. Or you just put a bunch of knives in there and let them fight it out. And
exactly.
The winner gets the fighters. I think that'd be more entertaining. I would pay for that.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. And finally, middleweight Ryota Murata will make his American debut. He's 7-0 with 5 knockouts. He'll make his American debut in a couple of weeks here, November 7th, on the other card of Bradley Rios. Murata, this is interesting, man, to me anyway, because Murata's a 2012 Olympic gold medalist for Japan. He's scheduled to face Gunnar Jackson, and just in case you're wondering, I haven't heard of Jackson either. He's scheduled to face him, but he's also fighting. We won't see him on HBO. My guess is, anyway, that we probably won't see him on HBO because Vasily Lomachenko is fighting on the undercard of the Rios fight.
That's right, yeah.
So you're probably not going to see him, but the fact that he's making his debut stateside this early in his career with just 7-0, it means that you might be seeing it. We want to see him. Is he as advertised? Is he, you know, as good as everybody?
Now, if HBO is behind him at all, you might see highlights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll find some way to get you the full fight, man. We'll find a way.
Okay.
You know. Well, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. And as always, you can catch Robbie on Twitter at RingsideRobert. And I'm at Ringside73, and we will catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.